Thank you, Orly. It's wonderful to be here again with everyone in Canada and right now. As you know, I'm right across the border in Camp Stone, having a great summer here. We're really doing wonderful. In taking into account all what's going on in the world, it's really wonderful here to see Jewish youth come together and celebrate their Judaism in a most beautiful way. So here we are, Erev Parashat Ekev, a parasha which continues with Moshe Rabbeinu's speeches as he's about to enter the land of Israel, or the Jewish people are about to enter the land of Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu is giving his famous sermon, his famous drasha, explaining to the people about what's expected from them when they enter the land of Israel. He gives them a lot of mussar. He talks about the past, about what happened in the desert, what happened in Egypt, all for the sake of teaching them about how to live their lives in Israel and the dangers that await them in Eretz Yisrael. And I would actually argue that this week's parsha is more focused on where they are going to, i.e. the land of Israel, and it describes the land of Israel in different ways that are important for the Jews sitting in the desert right now to learn about in order to ensure that when they enter the land of Israel, they will live lives as they are expected to do. And I would like to talk today about the uniqueness of the land of Israel as it is described from this week's parsha. And I would like to argue that Moshe Rabbeinu's description of Israel, and when he points out the uniqueness of Israel, what makes it different than any other countries, is not just relevant for the generation of the Jews leaving Egypt. Rather, there are messages here for the entire Jewish history till today. But we'll start with the pshat. We'll start with what we have in front of us. I hope that you can see the sheet I'm going to share. But you can also hopefully, if you receive the email, so you have the sheet in front of you. I would like to start with Dvarim Perek Chet Pasuk Zayin. Moshe Rabbeinu describes what is about to happen to the Jewish people. What kind of land are they about to enter? Ki Hashem Elokecha miviyacha el Eretz Tova. Eretz Israel is considered the good land. Why is it good? Eretz Nachalei Mayim, Ayanot Utehomot Yotzim Babika Uvahar. It's a land that it's water. Nachalei Mayim. It has rivers of water. Ayanot. From the word ma'ayan, an ayin is a ma'ayan, which is a spring of water. Utehomot yotzim babika uvahar. The water comes from the mountains and the valleys. What water are we talking about? What kind of spring water? We all know in Israel there are not many rivers, but we do know that there are a lot of spring water. There's a lot of sources of spring water, which is basically rainwater, which comes down into the mountains, sits somewhere in the mountain, and at some point, comes out in the form of a ma'ayan, of a spring. The Torah here is telling us that Eretz Yisrael is a good land because there is plenty of water coming out in the valleys and the hills. By the way, those of you who like to do tiulim in Israel know that around Ere Yehuda and Ere Yerushalayim, there are lots of springs. One of the most famous springs, of course, is Shiloach by Ir David. That's also a spring. So that we know for sure is something that we have till today. And that's the uniqueness of the land of Israel. Now, uniqueness compared to what? Meaning, if I want to talk about Israel and describe Israel to a tourist and tell him, listen, you're about to enter the land of Israel. This is what Israel is unique and special about. Obviously, I'm comparing the land that he's about to enter to something that he has in his mind. And what is that? We'll see in a second. Let's continue talking about the qualities of Eretz Yisrael. The next pasuk, Eretz chita u'seora, v'gefen u'teina v'rimon Eretz l'shem u'dvash, a very well-known pasuk in the Torah. Some people have a song for it. And this is the pasuk that mentions the seven unique species of the land of Israel. Barley and wheat, grapes, pomegranates, Teina are I know this one. Teina is a someone help me scream out. Teina is a fig. Okay. Eretz zeit shemen. Zeit shemen is olives, and dvash is dvash, the honey of tamarim, the honey of dates. These are the special species of Eretz Yisrael. They grow all around the country. Until today, you can actually see how these trees are very natural in the land of Israel. What else does Eretz Yisrael possess? What else does it have? Look at Pasuk Tet. Eretz asher lo v'miskenu tochal balechem lo techsal kolba. Eretz, the land has bread. There's nothing missing in it. Some people will say maybe bagels. I don't know. Eretz asher avanea barzel u'me'areh tachtsov nechoshet. What else does Eretz Yisrael have? It has minerals. It has barzel. It has iron. It has copper. Those of you maybe know that near Eilat, there's some Netimna quarries. They found some type of minerals. But I think everyone knows that the Yam HaMelech industries till today supply Israel with a huge income. So Israel has infrastructures that are in the land of Israel. It's a land with fruit, it's a land with water, and it's a land with natural sources. Now I want to pay attention. If I were in a classroom right now, a normal classroom, I would ask people, what is the Milah Mancha? What is the word that appears in these four psukim again and again? I think it's very obvious. If someone wants to shout it out, please shout it out. The word, of course, is Eretz, okay? Land. And I'm happy for you to all count and tell me how many times does the word Eretz appear in these four verses? Well, let's count it. I'm going to go with my Eretz. Oops, sorry. One, okay, doesn't work here so well. That's one Eretz, another Eretz, another Eretz, another Eretz in Pasuk Chet, that's four. Pasuk Tet is five. Eretz here is six. And finally, V'achalta, V'savata, U'v'yachta Shemkara, Ala Aretz, HaTova, Shemtelach. We have seven times in this short paragraph, the word Eretz appears seven times, which is a classic way of telling us that is the theme of this paragraph. Eretz. What is Eretz Yisrael special about? And we just explained. But my question is, what are we comparing it to? What are these unique characteristics of the land being compared to? Before I give you the answer, let's move three chapters forward in Sefer Dvarim, in Parashat Ekev. And here again, we have a description of the land of Israel. Ushmartem et ha-mitzvah asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, uvatem v'yirashtem et ha-aretz. You shall come and inherit the land. Asher atem uvrim sham l'rishta, the land that you're about to inherit. Pasuk tet. Uleman tarichu yamim ala adama asher nishba Hashem la'avotichem letet lehem uzaram. Again, God is promising you the land that he promised to your forefathers and to their descendants. The land Eretz, Zavat Chalav Udvash, the land of milk and honey. Trust me, I think you all know by now that in this paragraph, we also have the word Eretz appears seven times. And this is a parallel paragraph to the paragraph before. And here again, the theme is Eretz Yisrael, which of course begs the question, why do we need another repetition? Why do we need to repeat again the uniqueness of the land of Israel? That's question one. But the question number two is, what are the unique characteristics in these psukim about Eretz Yisrael? Let's see together. Pasuk Yud. Ki ha'aretz asher ata v'sham l'rishta, the land that you're coming to, is not like the land of Egypt, asher yetzete misham, where it's not the same land. There in Egypt, asher tizra et zaracha, in Egypt, the way you would water your crops would be by your feet. Biraglecha as gan ayarak, as some kind of a gan, a gina would be some kind of, you know, your backyard, your where you grow your vegetables, some kind of garden. What does it mean, vishkita viraglecha? The pshat probably is, the pshat of the pasuk is that you would have to carry in Egypt the water from the Nile. People took the water from the Nile, maybe in buckets, and took it to their fields. However, Menachem Liebtag suggests that it means literally with your foot. And why is that? Because in Egypt, the way the system of watering the fields would be would to have small canals of water coming out of the Nile, and it would come up to your field. And in order to ensure that everyone gets water, there would be small little dams, right, that would stop the water. And let's say you would have every day 10 minutes to open your dam. So how would you open your dam? You would take your foot and you would kick it open with your foot and the run from the Nile into your garden. By the way, if anyone ever goes to Yerushalayim, right outside Yerushalayim by Yad Kennedy, there's a wonderful area called the Sataf. I don't know if you've ever been there. And you can actually see they build some kind of, agriculture there that they have Chaklut Baal, Chaklut Shlachim. They have the same kind of agriculture of the Mishnah period there. And you can actually see how these canals of water are stretching from the spring into people's private fields. And the little dams are closing the canals. And you can just open and close the canals to basically maneuver the water from place to place. And that's maybe the pshat, another pshat of Vishkita V'raglecha. So how is Israel different? That's how Egypt. In Israel, look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Ha'aretz asher atem ubrim shama lirishta. The land of Israel, however, Eretz harim uvka'ot limtar ha'shamayim tishtemayim. It's a land full of hills and valleys. Where does the water come from? Limtar ha'shamayim tishtemayim. The water comes from the heavens. It's rainwater. So if we look at the description of the land of Israel and what makes it so unique in this paragraph, it is, of course, the focus on water. Where does the water come from? The water comes from heaven, from the sky, rain. However, we're a bit confused because in the first paragraph, if you go up, what was the source of water? Spring water. And not only that, but in the first paragraph, when we spoke about the unique characteristics of the land of Israel, we focused on the fact that it had fruit, it had natural minerals and natural resources. Where is that in the description of the land of Israel in the second paragraph? Meaning, there are two paragraphs here. The word Eretz appears seven times in each. And yet the focus of what is special and unique of the land of Israel is, of course, very different. And the answer, I think, to this question is we have two descriptions because we are comparing it to two different models of countries. While model number one is comparing it to the desert, model number two is comparing it to Egypt. And let's remember that the Jews of Egypt, I'm going to go back a second, I'm going to close the sheet a second. Let's remember that the Jews that are about to enter the land of Israel have in front of them two models of countries. All they know of are two places, not countries really, two places in which they lived up until now. They know about Egypt and they know about the desert. When they are about to enter the land of Israel, Moshe Rabbeinu, in order to describe them, the land of Israel, has to compare it both to Egypt and to the desert. In paragraph number one, he's saying, Israel is different than the desert. Why? A, it has minerals. It has fruit. We all know the desert is bare. There's nothing that you can get out of, maybe oil. Today we know we can get oil out of the desert, but there is nothing in the time of the Torah that can be produced from the desert. The only thing that we're really looking for in the desert is water. And unlike the desert, which has no water, sources of water, Eretz Yisrael has spring water that comes as if out of the ground, while the desert doesn't have really any water. The desert doesn't produce fruit trees. The desert doesn't have any minerals. So the first paragraph is comparing it to the desert. However, paragraph number two is explicitly comparing it to Egypt. Egypt is a land that has a lot of good in it. It has fruit too. We know that especially in the time of the Tanakh, the land of Israel was a country which provided fruit to everyone. We know the story. We'll talk about later about the story of Yaakov and the sons of Yaakov who go down to Egypt. Egypt, it would be ridiculous almost to compare Israel to Egypt when it comes to the produce that comes out of the land. Therefore, we're not going to mention that. We're not going to mention the fruit. What we are going to mention? Water. When it comes to water, there's a major difference. While in Egypt, the source of water is Nile, in Eretz Yisrael, it's rainwater. Now, rainwater, by the way, is a theme in this week's parsha. We all know the parasha that we say every day in the Shema, Bayayin, Shamoa, Tishmua, Mitzvotai, Shanuchim, Etzevetchem. The Torah tells us in this week's parasha, it's the last aliyah of this week's parasha, the Torah tells us that if we listen and obey God's rules, we will receive rain. So you see that rain seems to be the motif of this week's parasha, and how rain is a unique source of water in Eretz Yisrael. So that's why we have two different paragraphs that talk about Eretz Yisrael differently. Let's now focus, however, on the comparison between Egypt and Eretz Yisrael. And I have a very simple question. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Am Yisrael, let's go back to the pasuk a second. He says to them, Pasuk Yud, I'm going to put my mouth on it. Ki ha'aretz asher ata v'sham l'rishta lo ke'aretz Mitzrayim. Now, if Moshe Rabbeinu is a car salesman, I think he's doing pretty awful. Why? Because he is telling the Bnei Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael is not like Egypt. So what do you expect him to say? It's better, right? Like when I'm trying to sell you a better car, I'm trying to sell you a car and take in exchange for your car, I'm going to explain to you, oh, this car is not like your old car. And obviously, I'm going to say why it's better. Is that what's happening? Is Moshe Rabbeinu really describing a better country? Right? Ha'aretz, ha'arasher atem l'msham l'rishta, l'mitar ha'shamayim t'shtemayim. Unlike, v'shkita v'raglecha k'gan ha'yarak. We said that in Egypt, it was so, maybe the pshat is that it was so easy to water your fields. You don't have to bend down even. You don't have to schlep anything. You can just, with your foot, leisurely kick the dam open and the water will run. The Nile, 24/7 is open. There is always a Nile. There is always water in Egypt. However, we all know that with rain is something not reliable. You can't rely on rain. We know droughts, famine. I mean, just a few years ago, I'm sure you know that in Cape Town, for example, in South Africa, just a few years ago, had a big drought. They were had a huge problem. There was no, and because of rainwater, they had no rain and they had no water. So a country that relies on rain really is in danger when there is no rain. So why is that a plus? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu trying to sell the land of Israel to the Jewish people standing at the entrance to the land of Israel by telling them, ooh, from now on, you're getting rainwater? Sounds a bit strange. And really Rashi, if you look at Rashi on this pasuk, Rashi tries to get out of it by saying, look, Eretz Mitzrayim, it's not like Egypt, ki tova himenu, it's better. But is that really true? Is it really better than that? I think the answer is obvious, and that's what I want to focus on in today's shiur. I believe that what Moshe Rabbeinu is telling Am Yisrael, he's not selling them a better land necessarily when it comes to materialistic things. Rather, he's trying to sell them something different. Before we go into that, though, however, I'd like to go back a second to the two models that we had before. I said before that when the Israelites were about to go into Israel, they had in front of them these two models, the desert and Egypt. The land of Israel can be compared to those two models, not only then, but I believe throughout Jewish history. There are times when we live outside of Israel, and when we look at Israel, we see that Israel is better than where we come from. And then there are times in Jewish history when Israel is not as good as where we come from. And I have to share with you something a little personal. I live in Israel. I was born in Israel. My parents made Aliyah. Some of you know my parents who were in Toronto for a few years. And, you know, we used to joke about it when I was a kid. When I was a kid and growing up in Israel, so when people used to come from America to visit, as kids, we would ask them to bring us Cheerios. That was like the big thing, because we didn't have cereals in Israel as a kid growing up. I don't know if anyone here knows Israeli cereals in the early 80s, but there was something called Boker Tov, which really after you chewed it, you need some teeth, you need some dentistry work on your teeth. It was so hard. And we had this, we really didn't have a box of Cheerios. I mean, that was like, wow. We used to like only Shabbat have if someone brought us a box of Cheerios. And today you can get almost every cereal in Israel. Now, I say that as a joke, because really what's that about? But if you think about it, right, in today's world, compared to the 60s and the 70s, Israel is a very advanced country. And I would even say, half jokingly, that when I was a kid, coming to America was about you know, sometimes going out to like some kosher restaurant in New York City and having a good steak. I feel that many times today is almost the opposite. Many of my friends and students who live in Chutz Laaretz, when they come to Israel, they have a party of going out to this shawarma and that steakhouse and this hamburger place, and everything is kosher and everything is delicious. It's almost that in my lifetime, not that old, something has changed from Israel being looked as, compared to other countries, as a midbar, to now Israel looking, if Israel was once compared to if you take the model of the midbar against Israel, or the model of Mitzrayim against Israel. I think something has changed. I think that in the 60s and 70s, we compared Israel more to Mitzrayim, and Israel was, we said, listen, Mitzrayim is really better. There's better water. The source of water is better in Egypt or in the Western world than it is in Israel. Today, I'm not saying we're comparing it to a midbar, but I do think that it's not the same. And there are, of course, many, many times in which Jews have made aliyah from countries that have been a midbar, right? Take Jews that made aliyah from Ethiopia the past 20, 30 years. Literally, they came from a midbar. And for them, making aliyah and living in Israel was really, wow, look what an advanced country. Look how you have food and technology. And it's what a sophisticated country compared to where we came from. So I think that these models were not just given to the Bnei Israel as they stood in Yetziat Mitzrayim in our parsha. Rather, they are symbols for the future of how we compare the land of Israel and how we look at it compared to what we know where we're coming from. And sometimes, believe it or not, Israel has an advantage to where we come from in its materialism even. Sometimes it's not. However, going back to what we said before, and if it's not, so what is Moshe Rabbeinu saying to Bnei Israel? Mitzrayim is better. There's more rain. The answer, of course, is that Moshe Rabbeinu is not selling materialism. He's selling spiritualism. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, Eretz Yisrael could be sometimes better than when you're coming from. There's fruit. It's a beautiful land. But if you argue with me that where you're coming from is actually better and there's more sources of rain and water and fruit, well, let me explain to you that Eretz Yisrael is about rain, and rain is about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We'll prove that in a second. But before we do that, I would like to point out in your source sheet another source, which I think points this out. You go down to the story of Yaakov and his sons. You all remember that with Yaakov and his sons, there was a famine in the land of Israel. And where did everyone run to? Egypt. Yosef and his brothers all made it to Egypt. The brothers made it there because of the famine, because there was food. So here we have this model where we're comparing Israel that has a drought, has a famine, there's no food. Oh, and Mitzrayim is like what we would call the Western world today, the sophisticated world, the technology, and of course, the source of food. How interesting is it that in this paragraph, and I even tried to prove to you that when Yosef talks to his brothers about leaving Egypt, he uses the verb alu. In Pasuk Tet, Maharu ve'alu elavi. Now, you can argue that geographically, Egypt is below Israel, which therefore means go up. You're going from Egypt, you're going up to the land of Israel. However, we know that Chazal talk about that Eretz Yisrael gvoha mikol haaretzot. The land of Israel is higher than all lands. And the best proof for that is whenever a Jew emigrates to Israel, we call it to make aliyah. Ever think about that? Even if you come from Syria or from Lebanon to Israel, it's still making aliyah. Aliyah is an expression which proves how Chazal, I think, trained us and educated us that going to Israel is always considered going up. However, notice that in the same paragraph, the land of Egypt is mentioned as a better place to live. Look, please, in Pasuk Yudchet. Says Yosef, Kut avichem uvo elai ve'etna lachem etuv eretz Mitzrayim. I'll give you the good of Eretz Mitzrayim. Ichlu et chelev aretz. You will eat the fat as if of the land, the good of the land. Pasuk Kaf. Einchem al tachutz et lechem. It doesn't really make a difference every word right now, but what's important is kituv kol eretz Mitzrayim lachem. I promise you the good of Eretz Mitzrayim. Let's go on again. Let's go and Pasuk Kaf Gimel. He sent his father, Asara Chamorim Nosim Mituv Mitzrayim. The motif of these psukim is the tuv of Eretz Mitzrayim, the good, the wealth of Eretz Mitzrayim. And yet, the beginning of this paragraph begins with Maharu ve'alu elavi, and it ends Vaya'alu mi Mitzrayim. Maybe to tell us, listen, I can't argue with you. Eretz Mitzrayim has more food, has better water sources. It's easier on some level to live in Mitzrayim. But Eretz Yisrael is about la'alot. It's about going up. La'alot in the spiritual sense, there is something to gain by going to Israel, with even if it's easier to live in Chutz La'aretz. In Israel, we are going up. We are trying to gain something spiritual as if that we can't gain in Mitzrayim. So Dafka in the paragraph that focuses on the wealth of Egypt, we focus on the fact that we're going up. To tell us, to teach us that just like Moshe Rabbeinu in our parsha, it could be that other countries, especially Egypt, is wealthier, have more food, but there's something to gain in Israel that you can't gain in Mitzrayim. And what is that? That is rain. And of course, what is the symbol of rain? What does rain symbol? The answer, I think, is very simple. Rain, as we read in this week's parsha, is God's way of communicating with his people, telling them that this will be the sign whether or not he's connected to us and he relates to us. The Torah promises us again and again, in b'chukotai teilechu, remember in Sefer Vayikra, v'netati gishmechem be'itam. If you listen to the laws of the Torah, you will have rain. In this week's parasha, if you hold and listen to Hashem's laws and you keep his mitzvot, you will have rain. Obviously, if we don't, we won't have rain. So rain is an indication for all of us sitting in Israel, whether or not we are really behaving the way we're supposed to behave. Of course, like I said before, there's a danger. There's a danger because if we don't behave ourselves, there'll be famine, there'll be drought, we won't have water. However, the potential of creating a relationship with God is such that what we gain from that relationship on a spiritual level is something that you cannot gain anywhere else. You're right, it's a bit dangerous. But just think that if you actually succeed, you are gaining a relationship with God, a relationship that can only happen in the land of Israel. This idea, I think, can be proven again from another paragraph in Chumash. And by the way, I took a lot of these ideas from also Menachem Liebtag wrote about this. If we go into another parasha in the Chumash, Sefer Bereshit, Perek Yud Gimel. We all know the story there. The story here is about Lot and Avram. Don't forget, Lot and Avram left Israel and went to Egypt because of a famine. You heard that pattern of a famine and the idea that Egypt is always the source of wealth and food is a motif that repeats itself in Sefer Bereshit, in the beginning of Bereshit with Avram, at the end of Bereshit with Yaakov and his sons, and moves on to Sefer Shmot with Yitzhak Mitzrayim. So here, Lot and Avram are making Aliyah. They're coming back from Mitzrayim. And the Torah tells us, V'gam l'lot ha'olechet Avraham hayatzon uvakar v'o'alim. Both Lot and Avraham had sheep and tents. However, they had too much. V'lo nasa otam ha'aretz l'shevet yachtav. They couldn't live together, right? Like the famous sheriff, you know, the two sheriffs, this town isn't big enough for both of us. Ki haya rechusham rav. They had lots of possessions. V'lo yachlu l'shevet yachtav. They couldn't live together in peace and harmony. And as a result, a fight broke out between the shepherds of Avram to the shepherds of Lot, Pasuk Zayin, Vayiriv. There was a fight between Ro'ei Mikne Avram, Uven Ro'ei Mikne Lot. They fought. As a result, Pasuk Chet, Avram turns to Lot and says, oh, my good nephew Lot, Alnati Miriva Benu Vincha, why do we have to fight between us, between our shepherds? We're brothers, Anashim Achim Anachnu. Halo kol ha'aretz lefanecha, the whole land is before you. Ki pared namelai. Let's separate our ways. You go left. If you want to go left, I'll go right. If you want to go right, l'meyamin asmila. Now listen to this. This is fascinating. Vayisa Lot et einav. Lot has to decide where he wants to live in Israel. I'm assuming that it's not that expensive at that point to live in Israel like it is today. And he has a choice where to settle, where to live. Vayisalot et einav, vayar et kol kikar hayarden. What does he see? The Jordan Valley. Kikar hayarden, kula mashke. What does mashke mean? Mashke is liquid. What's the liquid? Very simple. The Jordan River. Now, just imagine, Lot is coming from Mitzrayim. And you can mamish take the psukim of Moshe Rabbeinu and cut and paste them into Lot. Lot is looking and saying, oh my God, lo ke'eretz Mitzrayim asher yatzetem misham. Israel is not like Egypt. In Israel, we have to rely on rain. Oh my God, how can we farmers here? What happens to desert rain? Lot is saying to himself, I loved the model of Egypt. I love the idea that you have a Nile, that you have a river, that you have a source of water that never goes dry. Where can I find that? He looks at the Jordan Valley and he sees the Jordan Valley. And what's the Jordan Valley? The Jordan Valley is a great copy of Egypt. It is a desert. I'm sure everyone that's been to Jordan Valley knows how hot it is. I did my basic training there so I can vouch how hot it is. By the way, if you go on Google, it's still mentioned as the fourth or fifth hottest place in the world since temperature has been measured. The Jordan Valley, Tirat Tzvi, has been in the 50s, reached 55 Celsius. I don't know what that in Fahrenheit, something like 100 and something, I don't know. Really, really, don't they do Celsius in Canada? Canada is like Israel, right? Celsius, you don't Fahrenheit. So everyone knows what 55 Celsius is. It's really hot, but there is a river. There is a source of water like the Nile. And that's why if you go today to Jordan Valley, you will see on both sides of the river, agriculture. Things are growing there because there's always water. And Lot suddenly goes, aha, That's where I want to live. And the Pasuk even tells us, Kegan Hashem ke'eretz Mitzrayim. This is like Gan, this is like Mamash, the valley of Eretz Mitzrayim. This is like the land of Mitzrayim, which was water. And as a result, Vayivchar lo Lot el Kikar HaYarden. Lot chooses to live in Kikar HaYarden. But what develops there? What city, of course, develops itself in the valley, in the Jordan Valley? The city of Sdom. You know, Sdom is a symbol for all corruption. Sdom till today is the name of a city that's built on corruption, on evil doers, on people that are immoral, unethical. That's what Sdom is. Where does Sdom develop? Sdom develops in the Jordan Valley, in a place that has its own source of water. Why? Because it symbolizes a place where there is no connection to God. There is no relationship to God. A person can live as if without talking to God, without praying to God, without having a relationship to God. Even if a person misbehaves as if, they'll still have water. So you're right that it's easier on a materialistic level to live your life. But because there's no indication of how your life is on a spiritual level, you're missing that connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And when you're missing that connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's where Sdom is developed. I just want to point out that you'll see on the source sheet that Lot serves the angels that come to visit him, matzah. Remember that? And of course, Rashi points out, why is Lot serving matzah? And what does Rashi say? Something so strange. It's on your sheet. Rashi says, because it's Pesach.
Because Pesach, yeah.
Right? Which makes no sense. What do you mean it's Pesach? The Jews aren't in Egypt yet, and you're celebrating Pesach in the days of Avram Avinu? What's the meaning of that? I think the answer is, based upon what we just said now, is beautiful. Rashi is telling us, Sdom, right? The Jordan River is the Nile. Sdom is Egypt. And Lot, leaving Sdom, is Yitzhak Mitzrayim. It's Chagat Pesach. God saving Lot from Sdom is like the same story that's going to repeat itself later on Chag Pesach, where God is going to take the Jews out of Egypt, just like Lot is being taken out of Sdom. And by the way, the same idea of some kind of miracles happening, of the people there being destroyed and them coming out, Bnei Israel out of Egypt, Lot out of Sdom. You see the models here are parallel in the Chumash. So that really, I think that really, really, really proves this idea that Egypt may be a place where it's easier to live in. However, Israel is a place where you gain a relationship with God, and that is through the rain. And let's just prove that point a bit more, because I don't think we proved that point. Why is rain really a symbol of relationship and connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu? Before I'll try to explain that idea, but I just want to say that this is a very well-known idea in Hasidut. In the name of Simcha Bunim Shischa, he explains that when the Nachash, when the snake, the serpent, in the story of Gan Eden was punished by God, one of his punishments was, Afar tochal kol yimei chayecha. You will eat dust all your life. So Rav Simcha Bunim of Shischa asked a very simple question. He said, why is that a curse? Can you imagine? That's great. The Nachash will never go hungry. Unlike any other animal, he won't need food. There is dust everywhere. Everywhere there's earth in the world. The Nachash, what a prize. He'll never go hungry. God is giving him the best prize a person can ever have, a creature can ever have in this world. Why is that a curse? Why is that a klala? And Rav Simcha Bunim says, because Baruch Hu is telling the Nachash, God, and the creator of the world. And it's my responsibility as creator of the world to make sure that all my creatures in this world have food and water and can and have livelihood. Nachash, I don't want to have anything to do with you. I am responsible for giving you food. So you know what, Nachash? You'll have your food. You'll never rely on me. You'll never have to come to me. You'll never have to talk to me. You'll never have anything to do with me. Take your food as if and get out of my sight. That, says Rabbi Simcha Bunim, is the biggest curse. To be sent away from God and not feel that you are dependent upon God is the biggest punishment that a person or a creature can have. I want to talk about this idea because I think it is the main idea of this week's parsha in the context of what we're talking about. Rav Lichtenstein, in one of his, I'm sorry by the way about the I can't read all the chats. I'll try to the last few minutes of the shiur. I'll try to look at the chat at people's questions or points that they brought up. There's a wonderful book that came out a few years ago of the conversations between Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Sabato. Rav Sabato, the Rosh Yeshiva of Malei Adumim, wrote a book based on his conversations with Rav Lichtenstein about many, many matters. And one of the chapters there, he talks about prayer. And he asks Rav Lichtenstein if he thinks that in today's world, is it possible for real prayer to happen? And what does he mean? He said, listen, 40, 50 years ago, people lived in a world where they really felt they were dependent upon God. They felt that, I don't know, 100 years ago, if you had a life expectancy was very low. If you had 5, 6 children, the chances that all of them will make it to the age of 9 were slim. I think less than 50%. If someone had an infection, they could have died. No antibiotics, no penicillin. A sore throat, and you could have died. The feeling up until a few years ago was that your life was always in the balance. You always felt that it's not in your hands. However, especially in the 21st century, but even before that, man has reached such accomplishments that, especially I would say that the younger generation are being brought up in a world where they don't, Baruch Hashem, they don't know what hungry means, they know what thirsty means, right? They open up the fridge and it's full and they say, Ma, Dad, there's nothing to eat here, right? Or they if someone has something doesn't feel well, you go to a doctor. Okay, obviously there are cases, La Aleinu, where we have troubles and problems that we can't cure, but I would say that on the normal kind of routine days that we have, if we don't feel, a doctor solves most of our problems. The feeling that we're living in balance, that we don't know what will be tomorrow morning, is not something that we feel today anymore. And Rav Lichtenstein really says in this book, and it's really very interesting to me, especially as a teacher, when I talk to my students about tefillah and about the challenges of tefillah that we have, I think this is a major point. Is it possible to pray to God when you don't necessarily feel that you are dependent on Him? How much of religion is based upon feeling that you are connected to God and you depend upon God? That when you pray to God, there's a real ramification to your prayer. You feel that you need whatever you need from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that He sustains you, that He gives you, that He provides you. Is that feeling really today the same as it used to be? And if it's not, work on that, and how do we explain really what prayer is about? And I think that that's exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to tell Bnei Yisrael. It is true that it's going to be hard. I'm not suggesting that life in Israel is easier. In fact, it's going to be harder because in the desert, if you remember, where we had no food and no water, we lived on miracles. We got the man. We had the water from the well. From now on, you're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to sweat. You're going to have to toil. You're going to have to really work hard. And I'm not promising you necessarily an easier life, but I promise you a more meaningful life, a life in which you can connect yourself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you can relate to him, and you will have an indication of how well you are doing or not. That is what Moshe Rabbeinu is selling to Am Yisrael, not a better life in materialism, but a better life in spiritualism. And that is symbolized by the idea of the rain in Eretz Yisrael providing water to the Jewish people in the land of Israel. If it's okay, I would like to just look quickly at the chats. If someone wants to, by the way, speak, call out and ask a question, make a comment, now is a good time. Someone asked about, I think someone wrote about, excellent, someone wrote here about you know, the fact that Israel today is considered one of the more advanced countries in the world, which it takes seawater and turns it into fresh water. We are considered to be in the world, I think, pioneers in this area, and we really have amazing technology. And the truth is, I think we should continue doing it, and it's wonderful, and it's a wonderful thing. But again, it raises a challenge, right? Of, oh God, we don't need you, right? You know, there's a famous joke about this guy who's looking for a parking place, and he says, God, I have to park my car right now, and if I can't find, and if you find me a parking space right now, I promise to learn Dafyum the rest of my life. And as he says that, a car in front of him pulls out. He says, okay, sorry, God, it's okay, I found it myself, right? Meaning the idea that we don't feel that we need God in our life, as it is happening more today with the fact that we used to rely on the rainwater and today we have ocean water, what does that affect our relationship with God? I think it's a very good question. It's a very good challenge of how we have to think of perhaps educating ourselves and our communities to learn more about what does it really mean that we rely on God and we're dependent upon God. That really is a very serious matter for us to think about when we talk about creating a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you for someone mentioning that idea. Someone asked me about these are God's promises because Moshe never was in Israel. Yes, I mean obviously Moshe Rabbeinu was not in Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu is describing what will be, and he's basically trying to be the salesman here of telling them what life would be like in going into Israel. Moshe's experience, of course, was both Egypt and the Midbar, but he's challenging them with what's happening to them in the future. Are you suggesting that in the region of the world based rain and positive light? I'm not sure if I understand what someone just wrote. I think that maybe I'll respond to it. I think that Moshe Rabbeinu in his description is not telling us, by the way, and this is very important, that Eretz Yisrael is just a land of spirituality, right? Moshe Rabbeinu is not saying, oh, you know, you can learn in Koilel. It's not the desert. The desert was a place where the Jews did not have to work, did not have to deal with the materialistic world. They sat in their tents, in their air-conditioned tents, their clothes were washed, their food was delivered. They were living in a hotel, a five-star hotel, for 40 years. They didn't have to do anything. They were on vacation as if. That's not what Eretz Yisrael is. I think that's another piece that I wasn't sure if we had time to talk about this. The other element that Moshe Rabbeinu is selling here is some kind of world between a desert and Mitzrayim. It's not the desert and it's not Mitzrayim. It's something in between. It's a land in which you're going to have to work. You're going to have to work even hard and work the land. However, it's a place where you can reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and have a connection with him. And the world that you're going to work in, toiling the land, growing, that is a means for your livelihood. It's not the matara, it's not the purpose. It's a world in which you have to connect yourself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The idea of, right, Kodesh and Chol, putting life, I think that's also what Moshe Rabbeinu is talking about here, how creating some kind of middle model, not Egypt and not the Midbar, bringing it together that's really the model that Moshe Rabbeinu, I think, is describing here when he compares it to both those places from where he came from. I just want to end, if it's okay with everyone, with one last idea to do with these psukim. If you notice in the psukim, the last pasuk in the second paragraph is Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Ota Tamid. I would say that this sums up the two paragraphs. This is the land of Israel, of God, where God Doresh Ota Tamid. God is always focused on this, on the land of Israel, and examining it, looking at it, which of course means that it has potential for reaching levels of relationships with God, but also it's a dangerous place, because if we don't behave ourselves, we'll be quicker to be removed from the land of Israel. Einei Hashem Elokecha ba. The eyes of God are focused on Eretz Yisrael. So my Abba, who some of you know him, I said before, he was in Toronto for Rosh Yeshiva Or Chaim Ulpana in the 70s. His yard site happens to be in another second yard site is coming up in another week from now, a little bit more than a week. So I want to mention that he used to explain this pasuk the following. He said, and I think in the world of Zoom, you can really, really understand it very well. I'm right now looking at my Zoom to a bunch of people on the Zoom. There's lots of people here. Now, on my Zoom screen, it happens to be that Mrs. Adina Weinstadt, I think, is. I'm looking at her right now, okay? With my, she's in my screen. But I can actually, now I'm looking at her straight, I can see Rabbi Kelman on the corner of my eye. Even though I'm looking straight right now at someone specific on the Zoom, from the corner of my eye, I can actually see other people. I can see my student Aaron Nissel on one corner, and Rabbi Kelman on another corner. So my father, Alav HaShalom, used to say, that's the pshat of the pasuk. Einei Hashem Elokecha, Hakadosh Baruch Hu, as if from the sky, looks down at the world. His eyesight is directed straight to the land of Israel. From the corner of his eye, God can see the entire world. But his focus, the eyes, are focused on the land of Israel. And that's what the pasuk means. Einei Hashem Elokecha ba. God is focused on Israel, and the rest of the world he can see from the sides of his eye. As I said before, that can create great potential for a great, wonderful type of life. At the same time, it can be also not so good for Am Yisrael if we don't behave in the land of Kadosh Baruch Hu the way we should. Then the land itself will kick us out. So it's dangerous, but the reward, if we do what we're supposed to be doing, is of course having a life in which we connect to HaKadosh Baruch. Tov. Thank you very much, everyone, for being the shiur today. It was a pleasure seeing people and connecting to people again. I hope that Corona will be over at some point. And we'll be able to see people face-to-face and meet in better times and in good health. I want to wish everyone a Shabbat Shalom. Thank you. I want to thank Rabbi Kelman for giving me this opportunity to teach Torah here. And wonderful to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi. Okay, just in time. Okay. By the way, talking about when your father was saying, Einei Hashem, I remember him teaching us that.
Oh, really?
I remember. I didn't get a chance to introduce Rabbi Tavori, but I mentioned it actually last night, who were there, Rabbi Tavori. Of course, Rabbi Aviad's like father was my Rosh Hashiva in high school. And I remember him telling us that, Einei Hashem Elokecha ba. I remember a lot of other things he said, other good examples. And of course, I remember you when you were quite young. thank you. And we're lucky you're in Camp Stone this summer. So we can have you. Otherwise, I wouldn't ask you to get up at 3:30 in the morning. So a pleasure having you. Thank you very much. And tomorrow morning, of course, at 9:30, my shiur on Pirkei Avot. Sunday, Rabbi Liebtag continues his shiur on Sefer Dvarim at 11 a.m. And Monday, of course, Rabbi Shira Mervis continues her series on rabbis from Islamic lands, and Alex Israel finishes his series on Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, the last of the seven-part series. And then on Tuesday, we're going to have a special program I mentioned last night for the first time. We just posted it on the website. You can see the link that Orly posted. We'll have an interview. My brother from Israel Kedma will be interviewing Yaakov Katz, the editor of the Jerusalem Post, sort of a once in a while series interviewing interesting people in Israel. So the editor of Jerusalem Post, he's a observant Jew. And that will be Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. in Israel. So you do have to register. We just put the link on the site on the in the chat box. Okay. And thank you very much. Rav Aviad, how's everything in camp? I went to pick up a Zariat this morning at the border. They drove him to the border. That's why I missed the shir this morning. I had to go pick him up at the border because he's off to Israel, please God, on Wednesday, to be your neighbor for the year.
Yes, we told him he's always welcome.
Yes, okay. All right. Bye, Tov, everybody. Thank you very much.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Okay.
Shabbat shalom.
Hi, Aaron. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Shabbat shalom.
Wonderful. Shabbat shalom. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.